This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 136. It's the 18th of September and it's nearly 6:30. And I'm here with my good co-host, excellent co-host, Henry Viola Hare. You can find him at HT Viola on Twitter/X. And you can find me, Peter Higgins, at Conquest3 on Twitter. And we're here after what was a marathon bonanza that we had as 135, which we ended up splitting into two halves. So if you've missed the second half, guys, ladies and gents, it's still out there for you to listen to. We had the fantastic Matthew Gregory with a single T, 5, on X with us, and he was absolutely phenomenal. We covered all manner of different things, including his first sort of investing christening, almost. We call it christening, don't we? You get absolutely dipped in and then dipped out again with BP, and then going on to buy the likes of Unilever and all things Warhammer, Lord of the Rings, to do with Games Workshop, which came out with a trading update today, which is one line. I'm like, wow. You know you've got a cult following where you can just write one line. We're in line and just walk away. And people don't go, what the hell was going on there?
I reckon that was an intern.
Down 1%, Peter. Henry, today or something like that?
I reckon that was an intern. They just put the title of the RNS in and forgot to paste the rest in.
Talk about what? Brevity, I think is the word, is it? Is that such a word? You know, cut down to the quick. If I was been waiting around for a month or so and a company of mine put out a one-liner like that, I'd be miffed.
But not if that one line is, we're trading as expected. I mean, that's a valuable insight there.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, enough Games Workshop bashing.
You know, no more Games Workshop. You know, we'll just say it's Games Workshop is still breathing. That's it. Okay. Right, here we are. A big thank you to Matthew Gregory. He was phenomenal. I've seen that quite a few of you have followed him. Thank you ever so much for doing that. He's going to be sharing more and more at insights. I think he's also started up his blog again now because he's got a bit more confidence in what he's doing, time to do what he's doing, awareness of people wanting to hear what he's got to say, all manner of different things. But Henry and I had a fantastic time speaking with him, and we're very likely to have Matthew back in the new year. And we've been talking about this idea that we've got regarding something we're going to do in December. So we've asked you guys and ladies to just give us some feedback, keep in touch with us, retweet, reshare, and we're going to put together a cohort of individuals, ambassadors of the pod, for an event we're going to put together online in December, mid-December, I think it is, before everyone goes away on the holes. Isn't that right? Is that about right, Henry?
Yeah, that sounds right to me. Yeah.
Okie doke. I might need to ask you to just pull up your volume a little bit for me, mate.
Oh, am I just quiet? Outrageous. I'll have to speak up a little bit.
Right. Okie dokie. So, ladies and gents, we are here today with the FTSE once again getting a little bit cautious because it's waiting. Is it tonight, Henry, the FOMC? Is it tonight?
I think it is tonight, yes. Tonight.
So, depending on the decision and the sentiment from the market, Dow Jones, NASDAQ, S&P will do what it needs to do. If it's a positive, whoop, 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 everyone's happy in America because of what the FOMC have done and sentiment is positive, tomorrow and the rest of the week, the FTSE might wake up and go, yay, let's join in. But until then, we don't know, right? So we're sailing blind here. I might even put my phone on a different sort of website so I can actually see what goes on when the decision arrives. I think it might be 7 o'clock-ish. So I'll have a look. Right. So the FTSE today, down 0.68%, 56 points down, closed at 8,253. The high of the day was 8,309. So you can see how much we've given up there. FTSE All Share, 4,511. Again, above that 4,500 is good for us. Anything above 4,000 is good for us, actually. And that was down 0.65%, 29 points down. And the FTSE AIM All Share was down 0.23% and was sitting at 743, a long way away still from that magic 800, which we'd like to see it at, but are still staying above the support level of 700. And once again, we've had a couple of companies being sought out for takeovers. Rumor Control was saying AMS is going to be getting a bid from somebody somewhere. So we'll see what happens with that. Yeah, lots going on. More and more takeovers every week, Henry. Yeah. Are you ready for one? Have you had one in the last 2 weeks, month?
I've not had any. I'm still waiting. Right. Annoyingly, the last one I could have had was Centamine, the gold miner.
Of course. Came in,
takeover offer arrives. What had I done? Sold it about 3 weeks before. You can't win them all, but it really does stick in my craw when things like that happen, because you think, well, did I really need that capital right then? No. Could have had a bit more in my pocket if I just waited. But hindsight is 20/20, as they say.
It is. And the difficulty is, I was putting out a tweet earlier back to Trader Mark. So hi, Trader Mark. We were having a conversation. I'll have to talk about this a bit later on about Games Workshop. But one of the things that Daniel Kahneman, Thinking Fast and Slow, fantastic best-selling book, was saying is that we will all make better investors, essentially, if we make fewer decisions. And that cuts both ways, doesn't it? Because sometimes we hold on to some stocks and it's already down 20% and we go, oh, I'll give it another. I've done that so many times, you know, many examples I could give here of my own failings, in the sense of I'll hold off. It's down 20%. Let me just see what happens for the next 3 months. Oh gosh, it's now down 25, it's now down 30, it's now down 40. And then I get to the point where I'm thinking, right, okay, Hail Mary, am I going to buy some more now, or am I going to quit? And I look at, we had this conversation last pod, I look at the managers, look at the CEO, look at the CFO, and I think, what have they done? And have they kept their word? And they haven't. Do I really want to give them another 6 months? Do I want it to be at 60% up, down? Or could it, you know, come out with some good news or get a takeover, for instance, Henry? And then I'm back at lucky break even if it goes up that much, because it needs to go up 100%, doesn't it? After it's gone down 50, 49%. So I'm looking at it and thinking, nah, I'm done. So you made that decision in that moment and it's the right decision for you then. And that's all you can do. Takeover comes. If it doesn't come, it doesn't come. You know, because I dare say there's times when you've gone, I'm out of here. And then you've been thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so lucky. I'm so glad I sold that.
Yes.
And that profit warning then arrives.
Yeah.
And you see the share just going, ooh.
Generally speaking, there's only been a very small number of shares that I've ever sold that I've regretted selling. You know, I talked a couple of episodes back about National Grid, and that was one that I sold years ago. I took some profit on it. I moved on, and I spent years looking at it going, why did I sell that? Because I still like it. And then a buying opportunity's turned up and I'm now back in. But it's very, very rare that I'll sell something and sit there and kick myself over it. Once I'm done with it, I'm done with it.
You've got to be clinical. You've got to be clinical. You've got to make a decision when it's done. And you've got to be decisive, mate. And when I'm done, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I am just like, we spoke about the last talk that I did that with, and I got so much grief on it. And I don't mind it. You know, everyone's got to make a decision. It's not their money. It's yours. It's mine. And we'll see what happens over the next X amount of months regarding that particular stock, which we will not mention on here anymore. Or we will when it comes out with some good news. I say, you know what, it's got some good news. I don't own it anyway. Right, Henry, you have chosen the topic of conversation you wanted to start with, my dear friend. So I'm going to let you just go with this, and I'll hang on to your coattails, and I'll try and contribute where I can.
Excellent. You always do, Peter. The topic I wanted to talk about on tonight's pod or today's pod, depending on when you're listening, is how to invest defensively. So in recent weeks, I feel like investment markets have been navigating an increasingly uncertain landscape. We're getting very mixed economic signals from all over the place. Interest rates have gone up and up and up and up and up as inflation comes down and down and down. Now, The Fed over in America is talking about starting to cut interest rates, which is usually the signal of a recession. They're a little bit worried that the economy is not doing as well as it should be, and therefore they're going to start cutting rates to try to stimulate things. Now, this means that investors are having to balance this idea of long-term growth with possibly the risk of a recession on the horizon. And so there's lots of conflicting signals in the market, depending on where you're looking about what to do. So tonight, I wanted to talk a little bit about what's called defensive investing. And this idea of defensive investing is focused all around putting your money into things that should go down less than the market when the market drops. So they're more defensive than other types of positions. So traditionally, things like bonds don't tend to be particularly volatile. They're priced based off the income that they generate. That income is fixed. And therefore, you always know roughly what they're worth if you hold them to maturity. Likewise, things like gold are seen as quite a defensive type of asset. You know, people have seen it as a safe haven investment for thousands of years, as opposed to investments in things like Nvidia, which are priced for astronomical growth. They're hugely volatile, massive price swings all the time, you know. And you've got this spectrum of different types of assets that you can put into your portfolio. Now, adding defensive investments to your portfolio is effectively about having a strategy that prioritizes stability and capital preservation, particularly in uncertain economic times. So when you're not sure what's going to happen with the world and you're a little bit worried about, you know, perhaps 20, 30, 40% getting knocked off the value of your portfolio, adding some defensive type assets is often quite a good thing to try. Now, there are a couple of things that you can do, you know, as an investor. A focus on blue chip stocks, you know, large, established, revenue positive, cash flowing businesses. They tend to have long market histories, strong financials, and they quite often pay a dividend, which is quite nice. They tend to perform well even during economic downturns because they're big established businesses. They've got an established customer base and they've got relatively stable cash flows even in the face of economic headwinds. Buying dividend paying stocks is also considered to be, you know, quite a defensive type of asset. Now, I've talked before about the importance of owning income generating assets. It's something I really like. Dividend-paying stocks offer a reliable income stream, providing they don't get the dividends cut, and this can help to offset market volatility. So if the market's a little bit volatile, you know, let's say the shares drop 10%, but the shares pay out a 5% yield, you've actually only lost 5% of your capital on paper because of those dividends. Investing in things like government bonds, you know, they're often considered one of the safest types of investments. Governments don't tend to default on payments. When you buy a government bond, you are lending money to the government for a period of time. It's very, very rare for governments to default on those loans. The UK government, for example, has got a AA credit rating, making it supposedly one of the safest financial institutions that you could give your money to. You give them, say, £10,000 for 10 years, they pay you 5%, and then they return your capital after the end of the 10-year period. So today I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about particularly the defensive types of equities that you can go and own, the sorts of sectors that you can put money into that should be more resilient in the face of economic headwinds. And these tend to be sectors that are effectively very stable. They tend to be selling goods and services that customers will always buy. They'll always prioritize spending money on, no matter what happens in the economy. They tend to be sectors like healthcare or consumer staples, things like groceries, supermarkets, or utilities providers. You know, you're always going to pay your electricity bill. You're always going to pay your water bill, more or less, no matter what happens, because you still want your lights on and you still want water coming out of your tap. And so I wanted to take a little bit of time today to talk about what types of defensive shares you've come across, Peter, and that I've come across that investors might want to go away and have a look at.
Cool. Yeah, I've got a couple here, which a bit people will say they're not defensive shares, but I'll explain why I've chosen the three that I've got, or the two that I'm depending on time that I've got, because essentially defensive shares should be relatively non-cyclical, should be able to buy them at any time, and whatever's going on in the economy, people still need them. But I've picked a bit juicier, so I'm going to say semi-non-cyclical. So do you want me to start? Do you want me to give one?
Yeah, go on, kick off with one.
Okay. So this is an old favorite of mine. I no longer hold it. I think at the time when I held it with dividends and all the rest of it, and I've sold it since. I did 100% on a boring stock, and it was one of them in the portfolio until momentum and everything else changed for it, and it did really well. And since I've sold it, it's actually carried on, and it's gone up about another 20% since I sold it. But this is a stock which most people would have seen in vehicles when they're up and down the motorway, or they're in the train station, or they've seen a train going past. They're up to all sorts logistically. And this is the global distributor of non-food consumables, including disposable cutlery, cleaning products, and personal protection equipment. And geographically, it's spread North America, continental Europe, UK, Ireland, and the rest of the world, and derives most of its revenue from the food service sector. Everyone's shouting the name out already. I know you know what it's called. It's called Bunzl, and the ticker symbol is BNZL. And where are we today? 18th day. The shares hit a new all-time high share price of £37.26. Year to date, it's up 15%. Past 12 months, it's up 27%. And this is a boring little plodding stock. PE of 25, market cap of 12.5 billion, annual dividend yield of 1.86. So that's all I want to say about that one. Just needs a bit of research. It's not really a, I class it as defensive because we're always going to need these things to be distributed. Even during lockdown, Bunzl did well, right? So that's when I picked up. Everyone's going, oh, that's not, and he still needed it. So that's when I picked it up on it, and I sold it in 2023. So that's my first sort of suggestion regarding that. Is it deemed to be a defensive stock? No. Is it defensive in its nature of what it does? Yes. So that's why I've done that little twist on it.
I like
All
that.
you people that want to just give me a shout on Twitter and go, what the hell is he talking about? Have a look at the chart.
Yeah, no, I really like that. It's a basic business, and this is one of the characteristics of defensive type companies. It's not anything that can go badly wrong. It's a very easy to forecast business. It's got reliable revenue streams, and it's not something flashy. It's not like Nvidia. It's, you're not going to get somebody that comes along and designs a fourth piece of cutlery for disposable cutlery, and all of a sudden Bunzl's lost its revenue stream. They sell knives, they sell forks, they sell spoons, that is it.
Yeah, workwear and et cetera, and all the rest of it. I mean, the beauty of it is, and you're talking about defensive. Defensive is meant to be lower volatility. You're not meant to be having that gyration of up 5%,
Exactly.
down 5%, up 10%, down 15%. You want lower. Is it? I think the word's beta. I think beta. Yeah,
Yeah.
lower beta. You
Yeah.
want lower volatility.
I mean that comes back to that idea that Warren Buffett had. And he was asked about, how do you focus on long-term investing and how do you protect your portfolio and how do you think about portfolio defensiveness? And he said something along the lines of, I've only got two rules when it comes to investing. Rule one is never lose money, and rule two is don't forget rule one.
Yeah,
Which I always quite
absolutely.
liked, and that really
Absolutely.
cuts to the core of defensiveness for me. When I was having a poke around, I started looking at, again, similar businesses that do very basic, very easy, predictable things. And I came across a company called Telecom Plus. The ticker's
Yes.
TEP.
Yeah.
Now,
Yep.
Interestingly, I've never heard as a consumer of Telecom Plus, but I have heard of Utilities Warehouse, which is what they trade as.
Yep.
And it turns out these guys have got more than a million customers across the UK. They're effectively a multi-service provider that allow customers to bundle together their energy, their broadband, their mobile, and their insurance payments in one payment, pay it to Telecoms Plus, and save a bundle on the household bills. Great. Who doesn't want to do that? Now, I know of a similar company called Money Supermarket. I think they're now called Money Group. The ticker's MONY. Yep. Used to own it. I don't anymore. But I've never come across Telecom Plus, and it's a very similar sort of cost savings kind of model. What I didn't realize. Oh, go on, Peter.
I'm interrupting you here because that was a really favorite Telecom Plus. He talks about it on and off on the pod. TEP. I think he still owns it. So you must have heard of it in passing on the pod.
Shout out to Wheelie in that case, then. I may well have done.
I think he probably still owns it, mate. And the other thing is, and I'm not sure if this is the first or your second one, I have not disclosed this yet, but you've already mentioned it, so I'm going to say, I have only recently bought Money. I think it's significantly undervalued, and I suspect in the next 12 months it's going to get taken over if it doesn't shake itself up. So we will see. But I'm just disclosing that now.
Well, coming back to, I mean, that's an interesting point about Money, because I've been looking at it for a similar reason. I've not pulled the trigger on it, and I've got a friend of mine going, what do you think? And what do I think off the top of my head? I think it's cheap, but it could get cheaper. So held off putting any money into that one.
Telecom Plus, it's hovering on that £2 support level, and if that goes, we could easily hit 180. Hit 180 on no news.
Now, Telecom Plus is quite an old business, a bit like Money Supermarket, which goes back a few decades. Telecom Plus has been around over 25 years, and they've had uninterrupted growth in customer numbers for every single year of the last 25 years. Amazing. Now, if you think about what's happened in the last 25 years, we've had economic scares, we've had the COVID crisis, we've had Brexit, we've had the great financial crisis, we had the dot-com bubble, the list goes on and on. And this continued growing throughout all of it, which I love. They've also got a very predictable model of growing earnings from the supply of essential services. You know, they're really cash generative. When I started looking at the figures, they don't need a lot of capital for what they do. Effectively, they just need headcount. They don't need factories and warehouses and distribution models and shipping. Mm-hmm. They just need computers and people. And over the last 10 years, would you believe, their gross profit has grown by 254%. Their adjusted profit before tax has grown by 162%. And their dividend per share has grown by 137%. Which is absolutely astonishing for such a, effectively pedestrian business. Mm. They've also got really strong returns. Their returns on capital employed are over 30%. So there's a lot to like about this business in terms of both track record and characteristics. But what I also like is the fact that this track record isn't forecast to slow down. You know, this isn't a business that's mature and is stopping in its tracks. Quite on the contrary, they're forecast to grow their revenue from 1.8 billion this year to 2.1 billion by 2027, and to grow their earnings per share from 118p to 139p.
Okay, that's it. I'm done. I'm going to sell Money tomorrow and buy some Telecom Plus.
I've converted you. Even better. You can get the shares for just £17.80 against an all-time high of £25 at the end of 2022. So you're getting a bargain, in my opinion.
That's not bad, mate. I really used to bang on about it all. I was like, oh, my gosh, really? You know,
I think he's on to a
winner. Slow and steady
wins
the race, mate.
Yes.
Slow and steady wins the race. Yeah. It's always been there. You know, always been there. Slow and steady. It's a good company. And management just get on with it. There's not a load of people ramping the shares or talking about it, and it just does what it does, you know. And given what the cost of living crisis is all starting all over again, there's going to be more and more switching. There's going to be more and more people checking out what was the best deal, you know. So utility warehouses are going to be, I nearly swore then, going to be inundated, you know, with more and more people checking out and wanting to switch and wanting to consider moving, and you know, how can they save the pennies on the pound, sort of thing. So yeah, like that one, Henry. Like that one.
Excellent.
Okie dokie. I'm going to talk about a controversial one now, which I think is defensive, and it will be defensive for a little while longer. I say defensive because of the work that they do, and I'm going to describe the work that they do, and then I'll give you the name of the company. And it is one of the three private companies contracted by the Home Office to manage asylum accommodation alongside Serco and Clear Springs Ready Homes. The three companies have been awarded a £4 billion contract to run asylum seeking housing provision until 2029. The contract was awarded by the British Home Office Visas and Immigration Department until, 2029. So the shares today were testing a 6-year high. Back in August, they upgraded their guidance because of the contract was delivering for them and doing obviously quite well. And then later in August, last month, they launched the share back program for up to £20 million. Who am I talking about? I am talking about Mears Group, ticker symbol MER. Year to date, the shares are up 26%, and they're up 28% in the past 12 months. Market cap of 365 million, so it's a relative small cap. I'm just going to pick up some share scope data here for you, Henry, so I can give you some stats on it. Let me just find it. Here we go. So what we got here? We have got a PE of 9.4. We've got forward yield of 3.7. Roche of return of capital employed of 12.2. Yeah, everything's on the growth trajectory there for you. At the moment, we've had 3 years. Well, we're going on our fourth year now of the share price increasing, right? And I've just said it's six year high. So, 2021, the shares were up 22.4%. 2022, up 10.3%. Last year, up 49%. Henry, this year already up 26%. And the 5-year CAGR is absolutely smashing it up there. They're engaged in providing social housing repairs, maintenance, and full housing management solutions. And I suspect that the next 3 or 4 years, that is going to continue. And that's why my little twist on the play of defensive is that particular provisions of services, including all the other stuff that they do, is defensive in its nature. And as you can see, the shares are doing extremely well. At present, and sitting there heading out towards a six-year high. And as we know, with most breakouts, whether it be a 1-year, 52-week high, 2, 3, or 4, more breakouts attract additional investors because people see momentum continuing. And that contract's going to be running until 2029. And there's only three of them doing it at the moment. And if there's more need for that service, they'll probably get more work. So that's defensive for you.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Do they own the housing, or are they in charge of managing the placement of asylum seekers into others?
They are managers of. They don't need to own the actual building or variants of.
You see, now that to me is a service that I'd be a little worried about, for the simple reason that supposedly the new Labour government are clamping down on outsourcing. So
yeah, but who's going to do the work if mayors don't do it?
Well, why if they don't own the buildings, why couldn't civil servants do it in house?
Because there's not enough of them.
Yet.
Yet. No, I've worked in the civil service, Henry. There's certain things that they can do, and they're already running and doing that particular provision, right? But when you've got to do it on scale, you've got to get it outsourced. It's a bit like, you know, it used to have to take young people to prisons and take them to court and all the rest of it. You know, most of the time, yeah, if they're already in prison, there's only a couple of services that used to do it, and one of them was Serco. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And Group Four, before they got taken over.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a certain thing because of
in
safety
theory,
and other issues, you outsource that provision.
In
Labour
theory,
or any other government side, one day, that's it, we're not going to allow anybody else to do it, we're going to do it ourselves. Of course that could happen. It's not something that can be flipped overnight. It'd be absolute mayhem.
Yeah, well, yes. I think we've had enough mayhem from the government.
Yeah,
anyway.
And it's public and private that they do as well, Henry.
Yeah,
there's estates
that's
that they look
enough.
After as well. Yeah, private
that
sector.
That is fair enough.
Stuff,
yeah, it's not
sector.
A business I know a terrific amount about. The other thing that you flagged there, did I hear correctly? You said it had got a PE of 3.4?
No, 9.37 and a yield of 3.6.
Ah, 9.37. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
So it's not a
because that
not
was
a racy PE.
Yeah, no, it's not. But at three, I was thinking, hang on a minute, this is bargain basement. You know, it's in the trash can territory. What's going on?
No,
right,
it's not in the trash can.
That's me mishearing.
Yeah.
Okay,
or
yeah,
P
I
of
like
9.4,
that.
Mate. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So again, you've got reasonable certainty of forecast revenue, which is good.
Yeah. And the earnings per share last time out was 33.8.
Good.
Yeah. So not done too bad there, mate. And it's just I'm looking at it. And it's one of them shares. I've looked at it before, and for some reason took my eye off the ball. And since then, it's just gone. And it's one of them when you keep looking at it, you're going, that ain't coming back, is it? It's not coming back. You just have to sometimes hold your hand up and go, I've missed it.
Well, I did that years
ago.
There was a guy I met at one of the Wheelie Bashers, Alan, who talked to me about a company called Judges Scientific, little small
Yes,
cap
another one.
scientific instruments maker. They basically, from what I can recall, I'm pretty sure they buy other businesses, bolt them on. Anyway, Alan tells me he's owned these shares for 20 years or whatever, and they've gone through the roof and, you know, top holding, blah, 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 blah. And I looked at them and I went, yeah, what a great company. I love the look at it. It's bloody expensive. I'll add it to the watch list and wait for it to come down and buy some. Here I am, 5 years later. The shares have doubled in a bit. They're still going through the blooming roof.
Still going.
You know.
Yeah.
So,
It's a
quality
company.
Oh, if you're listening, Alan, I wish I'd pulled the trigger when I met you at the Wheelie Bash, but congratulations on your investment.
I think you're referring to Mr. Contrarian. Is that right? That
no.
Alan.
No,
not
different
that Alan.
Alan.
Okay. Okie dokie. Okie dokie. All right.
Right. So I've got another one for you on the theme of
okay,
defensiveness.
Go for it.
So
yeah.
This one's one that's got an element of growth to it, and a
okay.
strong element of growth to it.
Are you saying that the first two that I've given you don't have an element of growth?
No, not at all. No, it's just that often when we talk
I'm joking with you. I'm joking with you.
The company is the UK's leading discount variety value retailer. Now try saying that after you've had three pints.
Okay.
It's B&M Value Retail, ticker's BME. They've got 741 stores in the UK, 124 stores in France, and 335 Heron Foods convenience stores up north. Now, in terms of business, this is effectively a discounter. You know, we are talking somebody that goes out and really, really wrangles the market to get customers the best possible prices on consumer goods and foods. They've got a real focus on low cost So everything is pared back to an absolute minimum. This isn't somewhere you're going to be buying, quail eggs for £15 each or whatever. And they've got a real focus. The whole culture is about maintaining a price advantage over their competitors. So whereas, Ocado will sell you an ostrich egg for £100 or whatever, these guys will sell you, regular eggs in a regular box for £1.50. There's nothing that's frilly or expensive or luxurious about what they do, but they provide good quality at a reasonable price in a convenient and reliable manner. They've got a real focus on maintaining a very, very low rent base, so they're not bothered about paying premiums for flashy stores. They don't need them. They've got flexible wage models with their workers, so they scale the workforce up and down with demand. And they've got very, very tightly controlled variable operating costs. If you look at their expenditure profile, it's managed to within an inch of its life. You can't have costs flying around all over the place and try and run a value retailer. It just doesn't work. And as a result of pushing down on all of these costs, they're able to pass on these savings to consumers in the form of everyday low prices. Now, the business is very, very healthy. It's got a 20% return on capital employed, which is far healthier than most of the retailers out there. You look at Sainsbury's and Tesco, and they're nowhere near that. They're forecast to grow revenue over the next couple of years from £5.8 billion a year to £6.6 billion by 2027. And they're forecast to grow earnings per share from 38p to 44p. Now, shares are available at a price of £4.22 a share as we record this, against an all-time high of £6.20 back at the beginning of 2022. And I've got a feeling that the market's mispricing this quite badly. The company has continued to grow since 2022, and it's forecast to continue to grow for many years to come. The bit that really interested me wasn't so much the UK, which seems fairly well served with value retail, but actually the French arm. Because in terms of size and wealth, France has got a similar population to the UK. But where B&M have got 1,200 stores in the UK, they've only got 100 odd over in France. And I think that UK estate could be replicated over in France, which would represent a huge growth opportunity for the business, and would provide many years of profitable growth for them. And I think that the market's sort of mispricing the odds of this happening at the moment. So I think this has got some potential to grow, as well as having the defensive characteristics of providing basic goods that people aren't really likely to stop buying at any point.
Okie dokie. I'm just picking up on what I'm reading here on the hoof here, Henry, and it's all what you've said there is makes it a solid sort of proposition. However, what I'm reading here is that there, because of the economic uncertainty that we're in at the moment, we're waiting for FOMC tonight, we're waiting for the budget in October, and so on and so forth, and changing consumer behaviors has put pressures on all of the retailers, including even the lower priced points. I think I was having a conversation with you privately. I'm trying to think what company it was. I want to say Dollar Tree, but it might be Dollar General in America. It's basically gone or heading towards administration, being wiped out. So if you're right at the lower end of the price point and you're going out of business, what hope is there for anybody if there's a, consumers are tightening the belts?
That
So
is a
what this is
reasonable
saying.
concern.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's saying it came out in July. A trading update was okay. Group revenues rose 2.4 year on year, and they'd said that they made strong profitable progress was being made. But part of the reason why this had that drift down to lower £4 from six a bit ago was because they gave no guidance for 2025. So I think if you're right and they come out and say things are booming in France and we're okay here, and they give some guidance to 25, that could and should start the re-rating back from low fours to high fours towards five, possibly above five, and head back towards where it was. Because people don't want uncertainty. They want to be told, oh, I'm doing all right. We're doing okay. Henry, as we started this conversation, this pod, talking about Games Workshop, only needs one line. Outlook for 2025 is great. That's it. It could start a re-rated, mate. You know what I mean? It's all it's going to need. But yeah, good stock. And it used to be, I'm not sure now anymore, but this used to be a favourite of Phil Oakley's as well, because he liked the way that they went. And the margins are, I think you might have mentioned the margins. The margins are reasonably good on BME as well. So yeah. And they're popping up. They're a bit like Greg's. Almost every major city, you'll find a Herons or a B&M somewhere. Yep. So they're growing rapidly, you know. So yeah, good call, good call. Just needs a re-rate now, mate. Right, do you want to take a break here and talk about the charity bit, Henry?
Yeah, actually, I've got two bits to cover. We've got the charity. We've also got the competition.
Yeah, you want to do those, and then we'll come back, and we'll add a couple more stocks before we head out.
So
go for it.
I'm going to start with the competition because I love, you know, announcing the winners, as it were. So I've run the figures for the month of August, and in reverse order, we have got in third place with a 16.5% return, and a portfolio that includes Bellascura and Tech Capital, amongst others. We've got Nicholas Vaughan in second place, with a 17.4% return. We've got Nikki at Nakib N with a portfolio that included Skincare Biotherapeutics, InSig AI, I don't recognise these other three tickers actually, MCG, TYM and RGL. Apologies, I've not looked those up before the call. But in first place, with a 17.6% return for the month of August, we have Jay at Jet_Aero with a portfolio that includes Asset Co, the ticker's ASTO, Critical Metals, the ticker is CRTM, and that had a dire month, down 48%. Warehouse REIT, the ticker is WHR, that's one that I hold. Kazera Global, and this is the one that's carried it for him. Kazera Global was up 129.7% in August. The ticker is KZG. And I had to go and have a look at what these guys
Never
do.
Never heard of that one.
Neither have I.
Never heard of it, Henry.
They're a mining investment company listed on AIM, focused on the resource and energy sectors. They currently hold investments in a diamond project, a heavy mineral sands project in South Africa, and used to hold something called African tantalum in Namibia, whatever that is, which they've recently sold. And they've also retained the right to receive a lifetime 2.5% debenture payment on gross sales of produced lithium and tantalum, which I've never heard of. But anyway, mining investment company up 130% in the month.
So you've given us finally, four. What's the fifth one?
Ferro Alloy Resources. The ticker is FAR, up 9% for the month.
Yeah, Ferro, I've heard of Ferro. Okay. Wow.
So,
one stock carried that portfolio again. Yeah. Henry, just one stock carried it and pipped
130%.
Nikki into second place by 0.2%. Ouch. Wow.
A close run thing.
Very close. Never heard of AZJ. Never heard of that company. Just goes to show. The beauty of this competition, it gives everyone a chance to win the monthly thing. You know, the monthly comp. Everyone gets a chance. But Nicholas Vaughan has been very consistent regarding his portfolio of late. He's up again in third. So he must be up for the competition, maybe for the whole lot overall for the year. So we'll see how that goes.
I've not got them in front of me. I have got the figures for the overall competition, and he is up near the top somewhere, but I couldn't give you the placing.
That's okay. Do me a favor, Henry. Can you just pronounce and say the person's ex Twitter handle again for the winner, so that anyone that knows this individual can just give him a prompt to tell him that he's won. Send him a DM if you follow him. What's the ticker symbol again?
It's the account number again. Using at jet underscore aero. That's J-E-T underscore A-E-R-O.
Right. Okie dokie. Brilliant. Congratulations, Jet Aero. Okay.
Very well done.
Right. Cool beans. Do we want to run smoothly into charity?
The other thing I did want to talk about was the charity fundraise. So for those of you that are tuning in for the first time or you know, perhaps haven't been following all the way through the year, Peter and I ask our audience to donate a few pounds to a charity of our choice each year. So we produce this podcast, we put it out free of charge every 2 weeks. We love doing it. We love talking to people about investing, but we try and give something back to the community alongside just producing this podcast. Now, this year, it was my turn to select a charity, and I've selected Centrepoint, which is the UK's leading youth homelessness charity. And we're asking, we've got, I forget what the latest numbers are, but we've got a global audience from around the world that tune into this podcast every 2 weeks. We get comments on YouTube, we get comments on LinkedIn, we get comments on Twitter, and we love getting them. I get comments on my blog, we get emails that come in. And all that we ask, you know, in addition to engaging with us on the show, is that you go and visit the Just Giving page. The page is www.justgiving.com/page/TwinPeaksChallenge24 and donate a few pounds, £5, £10, however much you feel you're able to, but just donate a few pounds. 9 days ago, I was delighted. I get a little message on my phone every time somebody does donate. I was delighted to see we'd had £20 and £5 gift aid from our good friend Richard Baxter with the comment, "Always impressed with your selfless attitudes and generosity of spirit with your podcasts. Best wishes." Thank you very much, Richard.
Brilliant. But thank you, Richard. That's very kind of you, sir.
In addition to this sort of plea for our audience to engage with the fundraise, I just wanted to talk about what it is that Centrepoint does. You know, at this very moment, as I sit here talking to people from all around the world, there are thousands of young people across the UK that are completely without a place to call home. They are going to face tonight and tomorrow night and next week nights of uncertainty, nights of hunger and fear, where they've got nowhere to turn. But with Centrepoint's help, with your help, there can be hope for them. Centrepoint is a lifeline for vulnerable young people that are facing homelessness. They offer shelter, they offer education, they offer support to help them rebuild their lives. And for so many young people, it's more than just a roof over their heads. It's a chance to actually heal from some horrific circumstances, to grow a future, and to dream of a time when they no longer just have to worry about where on earth they're going to sleep tonight. The donations that all of you make to the Just Giving charity, to the Centrepoint charity, make an immeasurable difference to so many hundreds of young people across the UK. With your help, Centrepoint can provide beds, it can provide meals, and it can provide compassionate care that every young person deserves. And more than that, more than any of that, it restores dignity and it opens doors to opportunities for people that just want to get on in life. These young people have got their whole lives ahead of them, and with your help, they can step into a brighter, more secure future. So please, please, if you're listening to the podcast, please join us in giving them the chance to thrive by donating to Centrepoint today. Together, we can make a huge difference to hundreds of people across the UK. And all it takes is visiting www.justgiving.com/page/TwinPeaksChallenge24. Thank you very much.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEATS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the TWINPEATS promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Absolutely well said there, Henry. There are some stats out there. I think one of the stats I put on the blog each time the podcast goes out, and it's around the fact about 1 in 52 young people are effectively homeless at any one stage during the year. 1 in 52. Another bit here from a various body was saying that almost 136 young people approached their council for help last year because they were facing homelessness. Yeah, 136. There's certain people that live in certain parts of England. That would be the whole of their area that they live in, right? Yeah. So small village, small town, 136. That's everybody in that area that you live in that have been homeless at any one stage last year. So yeah, some really scary stats out there. And we need to do what we can to support individuals. And keeping a diary also with regards to the 10th of October, which will be in honour of World Homeless Day. So if you can do anything for anybody regarding that particular situation around your area, and you don't have to support Centrepoint that day. You can support anybody or any sort of local charities local to you that support homeless people, then please consider that. Put it in your diary. If you've got a spare day, got some time off, able to do anything, do a coffee morning sort of cake and biscuits and coffee, do a little fundraise for your local charities on that day. Please, please consider doing that as well. Okay, Henry.
Cool. Thank you very much, Peter.
And a big thank you to Richard as well for and all the other people that have individuals listeners that have donated so far. And we'll keep giving you guys and ladies a shout out. But please just consider it. You know, we're heading towards Christmas. We're getting the last of this September sunshine. It's only going to get colder and bleaker out there as winter draws nearer. And we, you know, need to consider helping those young individuals so they've got somewhere safe to be. Right, Henry, I'm going to carry on the plug-in, and I'm going to talk about another stock in a minute. And I have been asked by the lovely lady and head of communications at AIC, the Association of Investment Companies, to assist them with their major event of the year, which is the AIC Investment Company Showcase, which will be taking part in Shoreditch, London, on October the 12th, the 11th. Sorry, let me get my dates right. The 11th, get on the right day. Choose the right day to arrive, by the way, folks. Don't listen to me. It is the 11th of October, and it's going to be a major event for them, and they're going to have all manner of fund managers, male and female, from across the world. So the lineup includes managers from Alliance Trust, Alliance Technology Trust, Baillie Gifford US Growth Trust, Custodian Property Income REIT, Foresight Solar Fund, JP Morgan Indian Investment Trust, Lordy Venture Corporation, Ruffer Investment Company, Scottish Oriental Smaller Companies Trust, SDCL Energy Efficiency Trust, Temple Bar Investment Trust, and the Renewable Infrastructure Group. I will be leading a panel on that particular day, and it's going to be, I'll be covering the technology side of it on the Friday the 11th in the afternoon. So if you can get to that particular event, it'll be absolutely brilliant. You'll be able to meet all the AIC team, which are absolutely phenomenal. And you can pick up your tickets via the website of the AIC, which is www.theaic.co.uk, news press page, and you can get a free ticket with a discount code SHOW, SHOW 24. And we'll look forward to seeing you there. But anyone's got any interest in investment companies or want to know about the companies that actually, the funds that they hold and what the fund managers are buying and own in that particular fund, you should come along to that particular event on Friday, the 11th of October. And I'll get the opportunity to see you there as well. And you get to meet all the fantastic fund managers we spoke of. So there you go, Henry. Another event to go to. If you can make it, wonderful. I'd love to see you there as well.
Wonderful. I'm sure I can come and embarrass myself in front of some fund managers.
Well, I'm going to try not to embarrass myself because I'll be doing a panel session, mate, in front of three fund managers, trying to get them to just be as interactive as possible and get as many questions from the audience as possible. So if you've got any questions for fund managers, please, please do come along. Okie dokie. I'm now going to give you this stock, Henry, which I am mightily, mightily unhappy that I've left this thing just sail past me. And the reason why it sailed past me was because, and this is on an occasion where a company changes its name for the better. And the shares have carried on doing what they needed to do. They've kept off the radar. And the people that have bought it have just sat back and gone, keep going, keep going, keep going. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish I'd bought that. And I wish I'd bought that. I wish I'd bought that. And I didn't. Okie dokie. Who am I talking about this on this occasion? And I'll again go through the descriptor for you. And this is one of the largest land and property regeneration companies across the north of England and the Midlands, owning and managing over 14,000 acres around 100 sites. Yeah. Operates as a brownfield regeneration company in the north of England and the Midlands. It is organised into two operating segments. The income generation segment focuses on generating rental returns from the business space portfolio, rental returns and royalties from energy generation, environmental technologies, and the agricultural portfolio and income generating streams from recycled aggregates and secondary coal products. There's a clue there in the last bit I just said. The capital growth segment focuses on delivering value from developing the underlying portfolio and includes planning and development. That's the bit that Henry loves, planning and development activities, value engineering, proactive asset management, and strategic land acquisitions. It generates a vast majority of its revenues from the sale, that's the clue there, of development properties, okay? Regenerate, get the property, get the land, and it's completely, nobody wants it. Regenerate it, which Henry has spoken about as well before. It's a lot of work, got to clean it all up. That brownfield site becomes a site that you can actually build properties on. These are one of the better companies at doing that. And they've got the likes of Amazon and Microsoft all over them wanting to buy land off them. And they make a shed load of money. The company I'm talking about is and was started life as UK Coal. It's now called, Henry, Harworth Group, HWG. Oh,
I was
yes.
Go with Hargreaves.
No, that's a whole different one. Yeah. That's a different one. So I've spoken about Hargreaves before ages ago. Yeah. Now that's done extremely well. Harworth, H-A-R Worth Group, ticker symbol HWG. PE ratio of 12.3, market cap of 607 million. Small annual dividend. Year to date, the shares are up nearly 50%. In the last 12 months, up 70%. More recently, Henry, what did they sell it? So more recently sold sold a site in Leeds to Microsoft for 106 million. What it called that hyperscale data center is going to be built there. And the contract's been exchanged for the sale of that site, and the first cash payment's expected soon. It's going to provide 250,000 square foot of industrial and logistics space and a hyperscale data center and battery energy storage facility and energy from waste facility. Oh my gosh. Such a fantastic premium they've got on that particular property. Listen to this, Henry. It bought the former Skelton Grange power station site in 2014, right? For around £3 million before carrying out all of that remediation work that was needed. 10 years on, they've sold it for 106.
That's a tasty uplift.
They've got all that land, they take the time to remediate it, and they can...
I love it.
35 bag it, or whatever you want to call it. Obviously, you know, there's expenses
this is
cost an amount of money to do it, but 30-fold your investment after you've paid to remediate it.
This is a business. I've never looked at it as an investment, but I know it from my days in construction, and I'm so annoyed I've never looked at it as an investment. I mean, that whole process of remediation, but also the development, is hugely complex and, as you've just pointed out, hugely flipping valuable. I mean, the acquisition, anybody can go out, they can buy a field that's full of concrete or industrial waste or whatever, right? What the heck do you do with it? Now, cleaning it is one thing, getting the chemicals out the ground, getting the rubble out the ground, etc. That bit, you know, it requires some thinking, but it's doable. But the master planning, giving somebody a vision for how you actually transform the site, now that can be worth a lot of money. Working with local authorities to create a real strategic vision for the site, putting the infrastructure in, landscaping it, figuring out how you, you know, get cars in and out, get access for it, and then getting planning approval for the thing. Because anybody can dream up some cack-eyed scheme about, oh, we're going to have a super futuristic development here. But then you've got to go to the council and you've got to convince them it's a good idea. And you know what councils are like. Don't want that. You're going to run over a lesser spotted squirrel. You know, putting a pond for the rare newts or whatever. So you convince the council, that takes forever. And then you actually get on with doing it. So not only have you created this futuristic supervision from basically a derelict site, you then say to Amazon or Microsoft or whoever, hey, you don't even have to do anything. You just sit back, pay us a stack of cash, and we'll get the whole thing sorted for you. We'll clean it, we'll sort it, we'll get it all done to the council specification. You'll just get a site handed over that's good to go. Wouldn't that be great? I mean, it's a fantastic business model.
Yeah, done phenomenally well, mate. Because you've got to remember how tarnished the UK coal name was.
Yeah.
You know, and it got wiped out essentially by Margaret Thatcher and co. But they've gone on, mate, and directly developed around 2 million square feet of industrial and logistics space, and using your words, whilst also master planning sites and enabling land sales for the delivery of more than 5 million square feet of industrial and logistics space and over 10,000 residential plots as well. So houses, yeah? So the reason why this one jumped out at me, Henry, was yesterday the news was, voila, you've done so well. You've gone from a little tiny acorn over the X amount of years, got elevated to the FTSE 250, mate. And we know what happens then. All those companies, all those entities, fund managers that track the FTSE 250 need to be purchasing HWG shares, and they can carry on growing because they've got extensive pipeline now includes 9.6 million square feet of consented industrial logistics space expected to deliver up to 0.8 billion of gross development value by the end of 2027. So that to me is defensive. You've already got all of that going on. You've got your vision towards and looking outwards to 2027. Yeah, HWG. I do not own the stock. I'm speaking passionately about it because I missed it and I want those that have got it already to carry on winning. Yeah. And I'll have to keep an eye on it. I may have to just pay up for it anyway at some point. But It's there. It's entered the FTSE 250 yesterday. I don't see this stopping. If they can keep churning, oh, we'll just buy that for 3 mil. We'll invest 3 mil in remediating it, and we'll sell it to you for 103, 106. Whoa. I can wait 10 years for that, for 33 yep. bagger.
Yeah. It's fantastic. I mean, that's another one. Bunzl, you know, piques my interest a little bit, and that piques my interest a lot. And this is the danger of being a co-host on this podcast, because you throw names out and it's like, oh, I'll just add that to the watch list.
Oh dear. But it is there, mate. It's crazy. You know, because you mentioned the tech one, and I was on here with Pete. He was mentioning it all the while. I was going, nah, too boring. You know, and he just carried on. And that's now, you know, had a little bit of a blip and come down in value, in price, and so has BME. So I'll be watching those two most definitely, with an eye to maybe considering them. But yeah, this is what I'm saying about doing a little bit of research and not following the herd. And you know, the more times you hear the name, you think, oh, you've got to buy it. It's just, if it's a quality company, do your own research. I can't say that often enough. There are quality stocks out there. Tomorrow, Thursday, there'll be another takeover. Yeah. Next month, there'll be another takeover. Yeah. And if you're able to find that undervalued stock, you will be getting a 30 to 50% premium on what you bought it at. You don't have to buy it at the 52-week high or the 10-year high. You can go there, squirrel away, do some reading, and discover that stock of your own, and be brave enough to have the conviction to put your marker down and saying, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to buy that stock. No one else has talked about it. No one else has written about it. No one else has blogged about it. No one's come on a podcast and said they own it and you should buy it too. Just have your own conviction. You're going to end up outperforming the herd. I guarantee it. And more often you do that. There you go, Henry. I'm done. We've got another stock you want to share, or what do you want to talk about?
I am done. Other than to say, okay. I just wanted to say before we tune out, a huge thank you again to Matt Gregory, who was our guest on the last episode. Because, you know, we've had some wonderful feedback from the audience, which is great. I got a real sense from Matt that he enjoyed coming on the show, which is lovely to see. I mean, I think all of our guests enjoy coming on the show. It's not as though they go away in floods of tears. But
they always enjoy.
You know, it was a joy to have him on, and you know, really nice guy. I think I've enjoyed all of the guests that we've had on the show, so I don't want to labour the point too much here. But loved having Matt on the show. Hope we're going to be seeing him back soon in the future, and I hope he's doing well, and I hope all of our audience are doing well. And if you've enjoyed the show, and you've taken a few minutes to give to Just Giving, please, please ping us a message on Twitter, ping us a message on YouTube. Just send us a little note to say what you enjoyed. Have you looked at any of the research ideas? Do you want to know more? Have you got a different take on something Peter and I have discussed? Come back and let us know, because we know you're out there listening, and we would love to hear from you. So don't be strangers.
Absolutely spot on, Henry. I'm just, because you prompted me now, I'm gonna just give a couple of shout outs here. Child of the 70s, another great podcast that I have just caught up with. Varied companies discussed and useful information for further research. Thanks again, both. Thumbs up. So that was from Child of the 70s. Who else we got here? We have got here we go. We have got Invest Like a Sloth. I love that Twitter handle. It says here, replying to you, well, you, me and Matthew. And he just says, I'm a sucker for hearing about other people's investment journeys. Great listening and encouragement for others to take it up and stick with it when things go against you. Well done. So, yeah, some great feedback there. We're just going to name, just to name two that I can quickly do. Otherwise, I'll be here for the rest of the evening. I think we'll stay there with that one.
I was going to say, we've had a few. We had Roger Green.
We've had quite a few. Yeah, go for it. You want to name a couple?
I was going to say, we've a hello to Roger Green, who's tuned in, and he'd made a special shout out that he's going to come back and listen to the podcast. So I do hope you enjoyed the episode, Roger, and I hope you enjoy this one when you get a chance to listen in. We also had, who else have we had? Jamie Ward, sent us a little comment that he'd enjoyed the show. We've had, who else have we had?
We had Raj as well, didn't we? We had Raj
Yes.
If I remember rightly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just give us your feedback, leave it on YouTube, subscribe, follow on YouTube, like it on YouTube, and tell us on X as well. Just give us a little reply, reshare it so we can see it, and just stick Henry's name in the reply or my name in the reply or both, and we'll get to see it. Otherwise, we won't see it, you know, unless you put our names in it. And add Twin Peaks in there. Sometimes I do a search on that as well and maybe find it. But ladies and gents, that's it. We've done another hour and a bit for you. Henry and I work on this pod over the 2 weeks. We try and deliver it for you as well every 2 weeks. It's a lot of work. It's it's pressure as well, just to keep the concentration flowing and synapses firing for that time, because Henry's been busy at work and he's tired and he's stressed, and he still comes out on a Wednesday evening to help us deliver this. So all we're asking is for you occasionally to just drop a donation and to like the podcast, reshare it and comment. That's your task. If you can do that for us, we'll really, really appreciate it. Yeah. We don't want to get to the stage where we're so fatigued, there's no feedback, there's nobody saying anything at all about it, and we go, let's just stop it. You know what I mean? So please, please consider showing us your support and continued support. We really appreciate it. Right. That's going to be it. Enjoy 136. Look forward to hearing from you. It's now nearer to 8 o'clock than it was when we started. And I promised Henry we would not get to 8 o'clock. So I need to go before he tells me off. Ladies and gents, thank you ever so much. Henry, Viola Hare, thank you ever so much again.
My pleasure.
Best wishes to your good wife and the extended family as well. And I will speak to you later on, sir. And I'll see you in a couple of weeks' time when I'm waving my way or trying to find my way around London again for the AIC showcase. Ladies and gents, take care. Have a wonderful weekend. Hopefully it's another warm weekend wherever you are when we get to the 20th of September and 21st and 22nd. Enjoy. Have a great weekend. Take care. God bless you all. Bye-bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.